Donald Fraser ist Professor für Erdwissenschaften an der Universität Oxford und verbringt derzeit als Gast von Professor Bernd Michael Rode ein Sabbatical an der Universität Innsbruck. Gemeinsam mit den Innsbrucker Chemikern möchte der renommierte britische Wissenschaftler den Geheimnissen um die Entstehung des Lebens auf die Spur kommen.
I've just spent 5 months in Japan. I've been visiting professor at the Institute for the Study of the Earth's Interior. Mm-hmm. In Misasa, Japan. It's one of the leading Japanese research institutes for the Earth. And so I had some months left over, and I thought, well, it'd be a good idea to come and work on peptides, because this is one of the world's leading groups on peptide synthesis in the natural environment and the mm-hmm. origin of polypeptides. And polypeptides are basically enzymes, proteins, and they're fundamental to understanding the origin of life. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I came here. And the particular problem I wanted to work on is I wanted to look at the origin of biochirality. That means the what we call the handedness of your molecules. So your sugars, the sugars which make up your body, are almost essentially right-handed. They rotate, as Pasteur discovered more than 100 years ago, rotate the plane of polarized light to the right. And almost all your amino acids, all your structural forming amino acids, rotate the plane of light to the left. Okay, so we call them D and L. So why is this? Why did life choose to be almost entirely homochiral? Why not 50-50? Why not random? And it's these experiments that I've been doing in the last, only 2 weeks, and they've turned out to be, so far, remarkably interesting. We've concentrated again on clay. Because clay has the special property that it's a platy mineral, and in the interlayer space we can do nanochemistry with beakers about 50 angstroms, 5 nanometers wide. And in these interlayer spaces the organic molecules can penetrate, and there are surface catalytic reactions which take place close to the surface of the clay layers, which enable the clays to distinguish between R molecules and D molecules and L molecules. That is, we found in the last 2 weeks that in fact we can get as much as a 7%, which is a large number if you think of geological time. If you think of millions of years, mm-hmm. if you think of 7% in 2 weeks, and you carry out these processes many, many, many times, we find a chiral separation carried out by really a very common clay mineral.
Wie hängen diese Experimente mit der Frage nach dem Ursprung des Lebens zusammen?
People have worked on the origin of life. I think the origin of life is actually something to do with the origin of human culture, if you think about it. The beginnings of cultural awareness must always carry the question of the origin of existence.
Why we exist.
Why we exist. And so cultures, in fact, as ancient, to my knowledge, as the Babylonian culture, have had ideas about the origin of life. In the case of the Babylonians, it was a worm. In the case of the Japanese, it's different. In the case of modern science and the 20th, 21st century culture of testable reason, there are several competing views, but all of them have to relate to the question of, in my opinion, the reduction of entropy. So what is life? Life is a process that uses energy to reduce entropy. And we can talk about self-replication or mutation, but ultimately life is something that involves metabolism. And so for me, metabolism is the reduction of entropy and building. Mm-hmm. And there are some competing theories, all of which may have parts to play in this complex process. There's RNA world, of course. There is the sulfur metabolism theories, proposals of, I think, also Austrian, Vechtershäuser.
No, it's from Germany.
He's German, yeah. Okay, Vechtershäuser. Yeah. And Professor Rode, actually, I think it's fair to say, is the person who pioneered the possibility that peptides themselves played a most important part right at the origin of life. Mm. And so it's a very good place for me to be. It's the place to be, I think. In the world to study that, both from a combination of theory and experiment.
Zur aktuellen Debatte über die Förderung von Grundlagenforschung und angewandter Forschung in Österreich baten wir Professor Fraser um eine Einschätzung.
There's nothing new in intellectuals, in scientists being inventive. Right, you can think of Faraday, you can think of Edison. I'm using only English language examples. In most cases, good scientists are highly inventive, they're highly imaginative. And so you have to understand that basic research is high risk. Yeah? It's the sort of high risk which the ordinary commercial company would be my reply to the head of your economic forum. It's the sort of research that most companies would not want to be involved with because the payback time is far, far too long. You can't predict when someone's going to invent a new light bulb. And so what we do not do is to continue to develop the light bulb. Right? What we should be doing is asking new questions and looking for new solutions. Companies can develop the light bulb extremely well. And they know how to do that because they know how many light bulbs they're going to sell and what the price should be. Right, it's a different function, and what we do is we're operating that high risk, independent place in society. After all, we're paid for by ordinary working people, and it's our responsibility to be imaginative. That's what we do, but we contribute.